Hello and welcome to Day to Day. I'm Mark Higgins. Welcome to UMATSAT and welcome back, Dr. Hayley Evers-King. It's nice to see you again.
Good to be here with you.
So Dr. Hayley Evers-King is our ocean expert and guide, and today we are talking about altimetry. We are in the coming year celebrating 30 years of the measurement or altimetric measurements from space. So my first question to you, Hayley, what is an altimeter and how does it work?
Well, so altimeters are, I guess, one of the longest sets of instruments we've really had in the ocean remote sensing world. And they've been making very, very important measurements now for, like you say, 30 years. And what they do is really exploit maybe what you might remember from high school in terms of physics. I don't know if you ever remember drawing the speed is distance over time, drawing the little triangle when you were doing your exams in the papers. So they basically exploit this principle. It's what we call an active remote sensing method. It sends a pulse down from space that bounces off the surface of the Earth, in the case of what we're interested in today, the oceans, and it bounces back up towards the satellite where it's received again. And by knowing the speed with which this pulse travels and the time it takes, we can work out the distance, which is effectively, we can from that figure out the height of the surface that we're looking at. We also need to know where the satellite is and a whole bunch of other bits and pieces. But in principle,
it's an ultra-simulator, bouncing radar energy off the ocean surface.
Yep.
How long did it take? And therefore, how high is the, in this case, ocean surface?
Yep.
And how accurately are we measuring that height?
Quite terrifyingly so, actually. I remember this is one of the first things I learned about when I was starting doing remote sensing. And it's kind of mind-blowing to think that from all that distance away up in space, you can actually measure like differences in the sea surface height to the order of millimetres. It's that precise. And of course, this is very, very important, as we'll learn later in the podcast, because we want to know these measurements very, very precisely for the different applications we use altimetry for.
That's cool. So how high is the satellite?
Really high. Kilometres.
Are we about 800 kilometres? I think we're about 800 kilometres.
No, we're not as high as your geostationary ones that you prefer. So
maybe PA even. How high is Sentinel 6?
Sentinel 6 is 1,300
kilometres. 1,300. There we go. So thanks, Pierre-Yves. So we'll be talking to Pierre-Yves later on. Pierre-Yves is the scientific director for Mercator Océan. They host the Copernicus Marine Service, and we'll talk a bit more about that later on. So yeah, so that's, I mean, that's quite far. We're in Darmstadt just now recording. Pierre-Yves is in Toulouse. That's probably the similar distance to where we are apart, and you're measuring millimeters.
Yeah,
which is,
it's crazy, isn't
which
it?
Which is quite something.
I mean, I couldn't measure that precisely in a room where I am right now with a lot of technology that I have, you know, rulers, these kind of things. And yet you can do it from space using a satellite.
And we're getting towards 30 years of this kind of measurement. And I said at the beginning in the introduction that we're celebrating 30 years. So why celebrate a satellite measurement?
I think partly because of the value that it brings to society. And I think later on when we talk to Pierre-Yves, we'll learn a bit more about how this data is valuable to us in wider society. But there's a lot that goes into bringing these different missions together, right? So that's 30 years of altimetry. It's not just one satellite that's obviously been running for 30 years. There are some that have lasted quite a long time, but rarely do we get one satellite that you can operate forever to keep your time series of measurements going. And so actually, when we talk about 30 years of altimetry, we're talking about a series of different missions that have happened over time. Particularly, we're looking at the TOPEX Poseidon, the JASON series, and now the Sentinel series. These are a series of satellites that have been operated as what we call reference missions, reference sensors, reference orbits. You'll hear about these kind of terminologies if you look into what this 30-year time series actually means. And all those different missions have been collaborations. It's not just us operating them at UMETSAT. A couple of those that I've mentioned we do operate and have historically operated, but also our colleagues in France, where Pierre is from, our colleagues from the US also contribute to this set of altimetry missions. And that's not the only altimeters are out there. There's lots of others. And we can learn a bit more, I think, later about why it's important to have more than one altimeter.
Cool. Let's bring Pierre-Yves in. So, Pierre-Yves, welcome.
Welcome.
So, you've been involved in altimetry for quite some time. When did your journey with altimeters start?
Well, I started a long time ago at the very start of altimetry on TOPEX Poseidon. I was lucky enough to be involved in the start of TOPEX Poseidon, which was really a revolution in oceanography and the way we can measure the ocean on the sea level with such a precision that was we just discussed. And this really allows to us to much better understand the ocean and so on. And this was actually the start also of the development of operational oceanography, so ocean forecasting that we do today with the Copernicus Marine Service. And altimetry is really a key component of this system. We need to have this measurement from satellite altimetry, so the very precise measurement of sea level to constrain ocean model and to provide forecast of the ocean.
So let's talk a bit about what that means. So the altimeter itself, as Hayley described earlier, measures the height of the ocean. And I guess we know about the height of the ocean if we think about climate change and sea level rise. But from what you're saying, you can use this measurement to understand much more about the oceans. So with this measurement, what does it help us understand?
I mean, there are two aspects. I know one is key with the Sentinel-6 is the first, as you mentioned, that you measure sea level, mean sea level. And this, of course, essential to understand climate change evolution, and so on. This is actually a major achievement of all this series of topics, Poseidon, JSON 1, 2, and 3. On Sentinel-6. But sea level also per se is an extremely important variable to monitor the circulation of the ocean because the gradient of sea level is directly related to ocean current. And sea level is an extremely important variable if you want to constrain a model, as we do today as part of the Copernicus Marine Service. Bringing the sea level observation into a model allows us to constrain the 4D structure of the ocean, so constraining the currents at depths and so on. This is why measurements from satellite altimetry are so powerful. And this is why, by the way, we are developing not only Sentinel-6, but also Sentinel-3, A and B, because those data are really essential to constrain ocean models. That's and when you have the description of the sea level at fine scale, you have an estimation of ocean current, and you can constrain your model. This is really the power of satellite altimetry.
So when you're talking about an ocean model, you've got a full 3D representation of the ocean. So not just the surface, but the full depth of the ocean as well. And this information about the surface also gives you information about what's going on inside, or?
Exactly. And we are really dealing, it's very similar to weather forecasting. So let's say sea level for the ocean is very similar to what we have for the atmosphere with the atmospheric pressure on wind. So it's exactly what you said. And with the models that describe the 3D structure of the ocean, so not only sea level, but temperature, salinity, current at depth, and so on. But they need to be constrained with observation. Otherwise, you cannot really, you cannot describe the ocean. And sea level can indeed help a lot to constrain not only the surface, but what happens at depths, simply because sea level per se is a kind of integral of the ocean interior. So this is why this is and the reason why the community has been focused so much on SSH sea level from altimeter is because of this. This is really a strong constraint for the models that we run. And of course, we need in addition other observations from sea surface temperature from satellite in situ, but sea level is really a key and a component.
So, and Hayley, you've got a bit a background in sort of the wider understanding of the ocean and what plankton and fish might be doing. So the models that Pierre-Yves talks about, have you been using them in the past? And what benefit do you get from them?
Yeah, I mean, models are a really, really useful way, especially the physical oceanography models, of understanding what is driving changes we see in the biological part of the oceans as well. I mean, Pierre mentioned currents. Currents and ocean circulation hugely influence how much biological productivity there is in the ocean. And without an understanding of how that physics is changing, we can't hope to understand how the biology might change. So it's absolutely essential.
So you're going from ocean circulation to currents, and I guess to then fishing.
Yeah.
So and actual the human activities that we could actually see and watch. Mm-hmm. So who are the kind of people who use the what you produce in Mercator Ocean? Who are the people who depend on you?
Yeah. So in Mercator Ocean, so as part of our activity on implementing the Copernicus Marine Service, so. We developed products first based on observation, so directly based on Sentinel-6. We produce maps of sea level, trend of sea level, and mean sea level rise, and so on. That's the first product. Mm-hmm. And the other one is to use Sentinel-6 data into our models to improve the forecast that we provide on the state of the ocean. Just maybe to focus on specificity. I mean, that's you can measure very well with Sentinel-6 mean sea level rise, but you also need to understand, and also this is related to the way the ocean is gaining heat. And you know, when the ocean gains mm-hmm. heat, it expands. But you also need to understand where and how the heat is transported by the ocean current. And this is part of the essential role that the ocean has on our climate. And this is something you need to monitor with models. So you need to have the estimation of the currents, how much heat is carried by the current. And this is where the model comes and constrained with observation.
And what's the effect of that heat transport? How would I notice something is different, or what changes as a result of that movement of heat by the ocean?
Well, but the transport of heat by the ocean is essential for our climate. I mean, if we did not have this transport of heat from the with the ocean current, the climate will not be the same at all as that we have today. I mean, mm-hmm. The ocean basically, I mean, redistributes the heat from the tropics to the northern latitude, and this is part of the whole circulation. I mean, what we call a thermoline circulation, which is an mm-hmm. essential element for our climate today. So this is a tremendous importance in the climate, and we need to have the capability to monitor this transport of heat by the currents. This is mainly so for climate. Then there are many other applications that we have when we are dealing with currents. I mean, maritime transport, marine safety. I mean, we mentioned also other activities such as monitoring pollution events, able to forecast where pollution will be moved by the currents to take the best mitigation action and so on.
But it's more than just a scientific curiosity. Yeah, Hayley, you've got questions
I've
there.
I've got a question, yeah. So, Pierre, I wanted to ask you, so we operate at the moment, I think it's 4 different satellites with altimeters on. And one thing that's always occurred to me, or I've questioned, is why do we need so many? It's not just us that operate them, other people do as well. So what difference does it make to your activities having multiple altimeters flying at the same time?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. And actually, just, I mean, maybe to start on this, first, we need a very precise altimeter system. And this is what Sentinel-6 is providing today, and that what we had in the past with the Topex Poseidon, JSON 1, 2, and 3. Those are really the climate, the reference for the other altimeters that are needed. And this is, with very precise accuracy, this is the only way to really document the mean sea level variations, mean sea level rise on climate. But we need much more altimeter because the ocean is a turbulent system. There are many fine scales in the ocean. So if you want to constrain the ocean current in a model to be able to predict the current, you need many altimeters. And our present assumptions, it will need at least 4, but we know that we will need many more actually in the coming years. And this is where, I mean, we play with at Mercator with Copernicus Marine to merge all the data that you provide very efficiently on EUMETSAT from Sentinel-6, but also Sentinel-3, A and B. We merge them together in our models to provide forecast at fine scale of ocean currents on other variables. But it's actually essential to have this combination of different altimeters. But keeping in mind that Sentinel-6 has a very special role. I mean, this is really optimized for climate monitoring. It's also a reference for the other altimeter missions that is really this building block of all the altimeter systems that we use here.
I really like this part of the Sentinel-6 mission. It's quite compelling because I think as you said, Pierre, it's about continuity. So we're continuing this long record, but it's also about bringing us into the modern day, because Sentinel-6 has kind of the most modern methods of altimetry, but also is able to be consistent with the past sensors. And when we're looking at things like sea level rise and change, we need to have that consistency between all these different sensors that I mentioned in the beginning. And I think that's one of the things that makes this mission really quite so special.
Yeah, should we talk maybe a bit about this idea of the reference mission and what that actually means? So Pierre, I guess first of all, what does it mean to have a reference mission?
Reference, I mean, you have to really to know that to measure mean sea level variations. We mentioned at the start of the discussion, so measuring the sea level with a precision of a few millimeters, which is crazy. I mean, we have a satellite flying at 1,000 kilometers. It's really, really impressive. But to have such capability to monitor the mean sea level variation with the precision, which are much better than 1 millimeter per year, that means that you need to have a fully optimized altimeter system, orbits, instrument, monitoring of the quality, making sure that when you fly a satellite after one after another one, they are fully intercalibrated, and that what was done with JSON 3. So this is why you really need to work very closely on this, and this is the interest of this reference mission. So fully optimized for precise climate monitoring of the ocean, very well intercalibrated with past data, because what is interesting of interest for climate monitoring is the long term, so how the sea level is evolving over 20 years. So if you don't have this intercalibration, precise intercalibration between satellites, you could get very wrong answer on how fast the ocean is warming, how fast the sea level is rising, and so on. So this is critical to be very careful on this reference mission. Then when you have this reference mission, you can fly other missions that are maybe less accurate, but they will be adjusted on this reference mission. So you will benefit from the reference mission in terms of accuracy. And then you can really look at the finer scale of what we call the mesoscale eddies in the ocean, which is all the meandering of currents, the eddies that we need to monitor for many applications. I mean, I mentioned pollution monitoring, I could mention marine safety, fishery management, and so on.
Hayley used the phrase when we were talking earlier on today about team altimetry.
Yeah.
Say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, I think that speaks to what Pierre was just saying, that you really can't measure. And I don't know if any of you who are listening, and Mark, I don't know if you've seen much altimetry data. And I think sometimes people have a bit of a hard time understanding really what altimetry data looks like, because we're used to maybe seeing images from satellites from space, right? You know, you can.
Yeah, so what do I see?
I feel kind of bad for it, because it can sometimes look a little bit uninspiring, because basically it's just a little line. And often these are little dots of, you know, individual measurements of the sea surface height, for example, at a specific point. So they're in this quite narrow measurement sort of stream, if you like, a little path that you would see plotted on a map. And so it can look quite uninspiring until it is you bring all the rest of the altimeters together. And then you get lots and lots of lines that start crossing. And then when that data goes to our colleagues like Pierre-Yves and his teams at Mercator, they can then merge those data sets together to get a big picture of what's going on in terms of the ocean currents. And then you get an image that looks maybe a bit more like what you're used to seeing. Mm. Probably not, you know, you don't see the colours, you don't see the things like you would see on land, you know, different surfaces you're familiar with. What you would see is what Pierre was saying there is things like currents. Mm. And if you look over time, part of the changes that you would see would be related to sea level rise. So you have to have these altimeters working in a team in order to get the coverage that's needed to resolve all these different features that we're interested in.
And so I guess that's also, you know, why does the 30 years matter? We now start to see changes. What are the sort of ocean features you start to see by having a 30-year timescale? Is there anything that we're now only just starting to understand because that's the speed at which it changes?
Well, I think we discovered a lot with altimetry over the past 30 years. It's difficult to really summarize this in a few words, but it's just maybe one aspect which is key to remind. I mean, even when TOPEX Poseidon was launched in 1992, people could not think that we could measure mean sea level with TOPEX Poseidon. It was really too challenging at this time. And thanks to outstanding effort by the engineering teams, by the scientists, started to analyze the data, to improve the accuracy and of all elements to get this capability to measure mean sea level rise. On mean sea level rise, of course, to really understand or interpret mean sea level rise, you need long-term theory. You know, recently we just discovered that mean sea level rise, the global mean sea level rise, is accelerating. So we were at about 3 millimeters per year. We are more today closer to 4 millimeters per year. You can only assess this when you have a long-term series of extremely well-analyzed, carefully analyzed data sets, including intercalibration between different satellites, comparison with in situ, and so on. And this is where the value comes. Then, of course, altimetry we learn a lot on all these more smaller scale in the ocean, all the what we call the mesoscale eddies and so on that couldn't really be observed before. And people discovered that they were everywhere in the ocean, that you have this very turbulent turbulent signal everywhere that are very, of course, important signature in temperature, in currents, and so on. And this is, there's a lot of knowledge was gained on this system. So it was really actually a very revolution in our capacity to better understand the ocean, the functioning of the ocean, and the complexity also of the ocean. So this, the contribution of altimetry is really exceptional. And it's fair to recognize that the contribution of Europe was great. I mean, that's with EUMETSAT, with ESA, now with Copernicus Marine, with the link with modeling and so on. It's really a great achievement as a whole for all Europe.
And I think the models are a big part of the ability of the institutional team to function well. So we, ourselves in ESA, we work a lot on the space part of it, and we produce the observation. But a lot of the people who are eventually using these data don't know they're using the data. They're just using model output.
Exactly. And we were just discussing with Hailey, I mean, the fact that with the altimeter is a bit complex, you measure along a track and on that. But what the user wants are maps, forecasts, and so on. And this is where the models come. I mean, they really are there to interpolate the different data sets and to produce these 2D maps of the of sea level ocean currents and other variables. So models are really essential in the value chain that goes from this observation to end users and application. But it's very similar to what we have today for weather forecasting. I mean, when you look at the weather forecast, it's a model, but you know that the model was fed with observation, with many observations and so on. So it's the same for the ocean. But it's a much more complex system because we need to model the ocean at much finer resolution compared to the atmosphere. This makes it very challenging, but also very interesting to do. And we progressed a lot over the course of the past 10 years.
Just as we come to finish, so we've mentioned a little bit the scientific advances that we can make with our understanding of the oceans. We've mentioned a bit climate change. Are there any, so there's a concept of sort of the blue economy, so the industry that is supported by this kind of knowledge. Are there any particular applications that you're really seeing growing just now that you find quite interesting yourself?
Actually, there are many applications, and this is really, I mean, the strength of the Copernicus Marine Service that is implemented by Mercator, really to try to cover many applications. I mean, of course, we mentioned climate, we mentioned also climate policies and so on, but we also are serving the blue economy and all the activities. And if you look, let's say, for industry, there are many operations at sea. I mean, for submarine cable, for marine renewable energy, on all this, when you are operating at sea, you need a good description of the state of the ocean, currents, sea level, waves, and we do waves as well. And on Sentinel-6 contributes to waves, as well. So all this information and description of the ocean is very important for many activities for the blue economy. And there are other aspects. You take maritime transport. I mean, just to if you want to optimize when you are your routes. I mean, you need the best estimation of course, of wave and wind, but also of currents. So on in terms of safety, it's also important to have those descriptions. So all the information that are gathered and integrated in model, then they serve these different applications from the blue economy. So this is also an important element of the service that we provide with the Copernicus Marine.
I remember there was a book that was published some time ago that was looking at the maritime industry, the maritime transport industry. And the statistic they used was 90% of everything. And what they were meaning was that for a lot of what we have in our modern economies, 90% of what we have has at some point traveled by sea. And we never noticed that. And this is part of supporting that happening safely.
Exactly. I mean, people do not realize how important the ocean is. Of course, the ocean is essential for climate. I mean, but for the economy, and what you mentioned, that 90% of the goods are transported through the ocean is a key aspect that, and this is where, I mean, you need to provide information to do it in the right way, of course, to do it in a sustainable way. You need to have the best information available for the ocean to optimize what you do. And if you discuss also fisheries, aquaculture, in the are also those growing activity for the blue economy, where they need information on the state of the ocean to manage it in a sustainable way. And that's on keeping the ocean healthy as well. So this is
it's pretty important stuff. So this is we're entering the sort of 30 years. And we were talking earlier with Hayley, we don't quite know when the 30 years begins. But I think you explained why. Is it at the beginning? So where we stand now, we look back and we know that something incredibly important has happened. But I think at the beginning, of course, this wasn't known. That it was an act of courage and inspiration, scientifically driven inspiration and courage to do this. Hayley, what are you hoping to hear about more in the sort of the celebration of 30 years of altimetry? What do you want to hear more about?
I really like some of the stories that we're just starting to touch on there about the things you don't realise that the data has touched. You know, like the cost of the food you buy in the supermarket is influenced by how efficient the shipping is that transports it to you, right? You would not think that a radar in space affects the cost of the food you buy in the supermarket necessarily. I think even I don't think about that necessarily all the time. And I know a lot about what goes on in this building with the operations of our satellites. But it's pretty mind-blowing that that's where the data ends up. And so I'd like to hear more about, you know, those kind of stories.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward. So we're hoping to do another couple, at least two, hopefully three podcasts on more of the altimeter story. It's quite often a sensor that we don't talk much about because we talk about the images, because the images produce beautiful pictures. But it's been really interesting to hear from you both about how this really does connect back to everyday life really quickly. Pierre-Yves, just to finish, what's the next step in Mercator Sion? There's talk of the digital twin of the ocean. Would you like to say anything about that just now as we finish?
Yes, I mean, digital twin, I mean, is an evolution of what we do. I mean, it's new challenges. I mean, the way to describe the ocean, to be able also to develop scenario, management scenario, climate scenario, and using all the powerness of the digital system, high performance computing and so on. And I think one aspect, both for digital twin, for the evolution of long-term evolution of the Copernicus Marine Service, is that we know today, and given what we understood from the past studies and also from on the need from our application and users, so there is really a strong link to be able to observe and forecast the state of the ocean at very fine scale. And we mentioned at the start that we need to at least to have at least four altimeters. And we know, given the models that we will run in a couple of years, we are discussing today preparing the next generation of Copernicus Marine Service model that will have globally a resolution of a few kilometers only and regionally at the kilometer level. On those systems, they need to be constrained with much high space and time resolution of altimetry. So the next step for us is, of course, we need to continue this reference mission, Sentinel-6, Sentinel-6B, 6C on the long run, but we need really to have a much denser space and time coverage. And there is interesting, I mean, new technology coming, I mean, a wide swath altimetry, constellation of small altimeters, and we're really eager to work with ESA, with EUMETSAT, and to work together on what should be the future system that we need to the system that we envision for the next decade.
And I think if people are thinking about if they're involved in this kind of field already and they're thinking about where might they like to make a career, our understanding of the oceans, we're just starting to really enter a phase of dramatic growth in terms of what is possible with the modeling, with the observations to do some really quite important work at a particular point in the Earth's climate history. It's quite an exciting phase.
It definitely is. I think, you know, we've spoken here about altimetry being one of the longest records, but, you know, provide the advances in that combined with all the other data and the modelling that we're getting now means we are opening up new possibilities for using this data to gain insights about our Earth towards our activities and things like that. You know, the resolution Pierre-Yves mentioned, that's super important. You know, so much of what we do is near the coast and things like that. and so many of the challenges we're going to face are going to be in those environments, that having this new technology, but also regular data, you know, it's operational. We get it every day, sub-daily in cases. This really is incredibly powerful for making change happen.
Pierre, you've one last question to you. If people want to know more about Mercator-Sion or the Copernicus Marine Service, where can they find out more?
Well, all the information, of course, in a different website that we run, but the best is to contact us and to come and visit us in Toulouse. And the work that we do at Mercator is really great. We really enjoy a lot, working on all these issues dealing with the ocean. Of course, there's a lot of interest for the ocean, and we are really pushing all the limit on the way to describe the ocean, to better understanding with our model, with observation and so on. So, of course, you can take a lot of information on the Copernicus Marine website, on Mercator, but the best is to visit us and to discuss with us.
Awesome. Pierre-Yves, thank you so much. And Hayley, thank you again to you. Lovely to see you again. And we shall meet again to talk more about altimetry, hopefully in the very near future.
Looking forward to it.
Celebrate 30 years. We really hope you've enjoyed this edition of the podcast. And if you have questions or things that you would like to hear about, do get in touch. We'll put the link below in the notes. And thank you all for listening. And thank you again to Pierre-Yves and Hayley.